Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
Tonight's broadcast is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh wants to change the way people eat forever. Fresh, delicious, healthy, pre-measured ingredients that are delivered to your door with step-by-step instructions for cooking. Several meals every week for 2 to 4 people, $35 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and you enter the promo code THINKINGATHEIST. We may or may not have a show next week. I'm busy finishing up a bunch of other stuff. I'm part of the Atheist of Facebook online convention, a free event broadcast on YouTube here on the 19th, just a few days. You can search that, atheistoffacebook.com. We might try another random reason, kind of a listener-driven call-in show for Tuesday. But in 2 weeks, I'm doing a broadcast on atheist youth. And then in 3 weeks, we're going to talk about homeschool cults, these extreme cases of religious homeschooling. Already I've had complaints from people who are saying, hey, you're misrepresenting all homeschools. And I never said all homeschools. I'm talking about the crazy ones, the extreme cases. We're talking about homeschool cults. We're going to talk to some people who have run that gauntlet and come out the other side and sort of live to tell the tale. That's coming up the first Tuesday in April. And by the way, if you want to submit something for those shows, if you're an atheist teenager or you've been involved in some way in a homeschool cult, the email address is podcast@thethinkingatheist.com. And I'll try to include as many of those as I can. It wasn't all that surprising that I had a few complaints from people who realized that we were not, on this broadcast, taking a deferential look at the names and claims of alternative medicine. And they heard who my special guests were going to be. The skeptoc, Dr. Harriet Hall of Science-Based Medicine, who's a critic of alternative medicine. And the admin of Quack Watch, Dr. Stephen Barrett, is one of my guests coming up in just a few minutes tonight. And he is a critic of alternative medicine. And so many of these people came at me often with anecdotal information. I knew someone, I heard about someone. You know, I myself tried something and I got better or I felt better. And whenever they come at me with these defenses, I mean, there are always a few words at the end of those claims that I find are missing. Those words are under laboratory conditions, right? Somebody sent me a video of this guy. He's on his deathbed. He's sitting in a chair upright and he looks like a ghost. He looks like he is seconds from drawing his last breath. Now, who knows what this video is, who shot it, how legitimate it is? Are they real people? Are they actors? It could have been anything. The unverifiable nature of it is actually part of our problem here. This guy's sitting and they're just waiting for him to die. And for some reason, they're rolling video. And somebody brings this alternative spray, some mouth spray. I don't know what it was called. And they pry his mouth open and they spray this stuff in his mouth. And according to the video, within like 2 days, he's walking around, he's walking and talking, and he's feeling amazing. Well, if this was an accurate claim, if this was a true cure, if this was genuinely responsible, not other factors we did not know about, or the natural healing processes of the body playing into it, or something else, you know, if it actually worked, I would want to know that. You would want to know that. The problem is that I'm not going to take your word for it. I'm not going to sit here and bounce off of one of the countless claims on the internet and say, oh, it's amazing, it's a miracle. There's this guy I heard about who he flew himself to the Philippines. And he said that they had developed some process which is supposed to, as I understand it, cure cancer. They found the cancer cure, but, well, they can't be public about it. Because, you see, cancer is such big business these days. You know, it's like the big oil thing when they made the claim that someone had invented a car that runs on tap water, but the government will never let this go because the big oil companies would lose trillions of dollars or whatever. And they would be in fear for their lives. Well, that's exactly the angle that these people were using. Yeah, these people in the Philippines, they've cured cancer. They know what we need to do to fix this problem. But they fear for their lives if they were to say out loud what this process is and how it works, then they would probably disappear from the face of the earth. And for their own safety, they're asking you to fly discreetly to the Philippines to an unnamed location to submit yourself for treatment, which I guarantee you is not free. I mean, honestly, that claim on its own is just immoral. In the age of the internet, I know the cure for cancer. I know how to cure cancer, right? I'm in the Philippines. I do have access to the web. I cannot anonymously send the cure information to anybody I want to anywhere in the world. Even if I genuinely thought they were going to come, the guys in dark sunglasses are going to show up and they're going to disappear me, right? Fine. You couldn't find a way to anonymously release this. And even if you did genuinely think you were part of some global conspiracy, wouldn't the moral compass inside of you say, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one? I'm going to solve global cancer. Yeah, pardon me for being skeptical. We're going to talk about some more of this kind of thing here in just a few. I'm also going to ask, before I bring my special guest on, that you join me as we do an experiment here. We're going to participate in a little alternative medicine. We're going to get some healing going, but you have to do it with me. We do it together. You know, we're going to conduct our own little on-air healing exercise. That's coming up here in just a moment, okay? You may have noticed from the top of the show, we have a brand new sponsor, and I love these folks. How much time do you spend at the grocery store every single week? How much food gets thrown away when you're trying to juggle meal planning with a crazy, hectic life? HelloFresh is changing all of that. HelloFresh is awesome. It's this meal kit delivery service that you can customize. They offer a classic box, a veggie box, the family box, and you can order 3, 4, or 5 different meals every single week. And they ship these pre-measured ingredients with the specific cooking instructions right to your door in a special insulated box. And it takes about 30 minutes to cook them. Boom, you're all set. This week, we had a delicious roasted chicken meal. We had chimichurri steak. We had the spring asparagus and shrimp risotto meal. And all three of those dinners were freaking fantastic. And we have new stuff to try and enjoy next week. Nutritionally balanced meals that are delicious to eat. HelloFresh saves shopping time. It eliminates guesswork and waste, and it's good. Get $35 off your first week of deliveries when you sign up right now at HelloFresh.com and make sure and enter the promo code ThinkingAtheist. HelloFresh.com, promo code ThinkingAtheist. My special guests are coming up here in just a second, but first, I thought it might be interesting to try out an experiment together, you and I, using the body's natural healing mechanisms to fine-tune our inner machine, to make ourselves more centered, healthier, better overall. And so I have pulled up the website, the Chopra Center. I went to Chopra.com, a wealth of information about reputable healing techniques that have been demonstrated scientifically to work, I'm sure. And they have a fascinating article that's called How to Use Sound to Heal Yourself. And if you'll indulge me, I'd like to read just a few sentences from the opening part of the article. The first impulse to emerge from the silence of the absolute, or the field of pure potentiality, was the sound Om, or more correctly, Aum, A-U-M, according to the Vedas, the ancient Hindu scriptures. Even the Bible and modern science agree that the initial spark of creation came from sound or vibration. The Gospel, according to John, says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word was made flesh." If you substitute word with sound, it becomes, "In the beginning was the sound, and the sound was God, and the sound became manifest. In modern science, they talk about the Big Bang Theory, again, sound. It's this original primordial sound that diversified. The one became many, each separate vibration evolved to reflect the whole in infinite disguises, giving rise to the world in which we live. Universes within universes, each vibrating at their own frequency, interacted with every other frequency to produce the variety of life. Every organ, tissue, and cell has its vibration, which, when in harmony, creates the most wonderful symphony imaginable, the human body. I don't know about you, but to me that just sounds amazing. So I think we should give it a shot. Try it here and see if we can heal ourselves. You know, you've been having kind of a bad day. Maybe you're stressed. Maybe you've got a more serious ailment and you'd like to try this. It's a paragraph down further in the article that talks about nada yoga. This sounds promising. In the Vedic tradition, sound vibration is known as nada. In the practice of nada yoga, sound is used not only to restore physical and mental well-being, but also as a path to spiritual awakening. You have external sounds, ahata, and internal sounds, anahata. Okay? And if you skip down a few paragraphs, there is a section called humming bee breath. This is something we need to try. Okay? So the instructions are laid out point by point. I would like to ask that you would do this with me. You and I will connect with each other and, of course, with the universe as we realign and retune or finely tune our vibrations. Okay? If your vibrations are off, it just screws everything up. All right? So you and me together. Clear your mind. Relax yourself. Block out all distraction. The rest of the world for these moments does not exist. It is just you and I. Or you and me, actually. It's just you and me. Okay? The instructions say this. Sit comfortably with your spine erect and close your eyes. Close your ears with either your index or middle fingers. Well, it matters what fingers you use. It's interesting. Okay. Close your ears with either your index or middle fingers. Lightly press your lips together and slightly open your teeth. This sounds naughty. I mean, is it just me? Bring the inner gaze into the Ajna, which is the sixth chakra. Breathe in through your nose. As you exhale, wait, I'm going to have to breathe in later. As you exhale, make a smooth, even humming sound like the sound of a bumblebee and continue for 3 to 5 minutes, feeling the vibration throughout your body. Ready? Together we inhale through our nose and exhale, making a smooth, even humming sound like the sound of the bumblebee. I'm now 3 to 5 minutes of this. Makes my lips tingle. Did you have that problem? It's weird. It removes blood from the lips, and then all of a sudden it feels like your lips are asleep. It's strange. I'm not going to do 3 to 5 minutes here, but even those brief seconds, I mean, we must have done something to realign our body into more positive vibrations. We are now more in tune, you see. And we didn't have to rely on our expensive insurance premiums. We didn't have to pay a physician or a nurse, or a scientist. We were able to do this on our own, just you, me, and the universe. It's amazing. I can see you rolling your eyes through the radio, but just bear with me for just a second. This is fascinating stuff. I skip further down on this page, and it has a section called Examples of Toning Sounds for the Body. For the sinuses, the sound is mmm, with an M. For the ears, it's N with an N. Uh-huh. For the eyes, it's M. For the nose, it starts with an L. Lm. For the stomach, the sound is Pam. For the throat, it's Ka-ga-ga. Ka-ga-ga? Your jaw resonates with ya, you, ye. The diaphragm is ha. The reproductive organs are ma'am. Wait a minute. My reproductive organs aren't working, and I can say ma'am? Ma'am. Who makes this shit up? There's so much of this material out there, I'll tell you. I wrote a chapter in my book, Sacred Cows, about much of this kind of thing. I actually started tackling the faith healers, you know, the Peter Popoffs of the world, but we also get into all these New Age type things. Everything from chromotherapy, you know, where you're healing with color, to using crystals, which is huge in Hinduism and other belief cultures, belief systems. Polarity therapy, the idea that you have a positive and negative polarity that can fall out of balance. Reflexology, which talks about applying pressure to different parts of the feet. Yeah, I've heard this before. Someone said the foot is connected to everything. So they just jack with your feet and somehow they're able to make you breathe better, or they're able to reduce back pain or improve digestion or remove headaches or whatnot just by sort of poking around on your feet. Go figure. Aromatherapy, the wonderful healing properties of smell. You know, you can sniff all sorts of good stuff and your body benefits. Go figure. There are also those who read our auras. Everybody's got an aura, an energy field that surrounds us and emits different colors if you know how to read them and see them. If your aura is gray, by the way, you're a negative person and you're very fearful and quite often depressed, so beware. If you're orange, you have an orange aura, that's pride, that's boldness and ambition, you're a go-getter. Deep red, look out, you're an angry person. Of course, in order to be able to see this aura, you have to develop through some sort of a spiritual exercise, I understand. You have to develop your sixth sense or your third eye. So once you've got the third eye, then you can see the aura and you can begin to help treat people who have aura issues. There's a host of these types of alternative, or many times they're called complementary medicine, acupuncture, Chinese or Oriental medicine. There's massage treatments, body movement therapies. There's different types of yoga. There's herbal, tons of herbal supplements and dietary supplements out there. Electromagnetic therapy. There's Reiki healing, biofeedback, meditation, healing through art, dance, and music, even. As you engage the senses, touch, and eyesight and hearing and smell and taste, all of this can affect your overall health. Let's talk about alternative medicine tonight. Let's talk about what it is, about what it isn't, and what the hell we do with all the names and claims of alternative medicine. My special guest tonight include Dr. Harriet Hall, who is an MD. She is a retired family physician and a former Air Force flight surgeon. She is one of the founders of and an editor for the website Science Based Medicine. She writes the Skeptoc column for Skeptic magazine. She's also a contributor to Skeptical Inquirer. And she recently produced a 10-video lecture series on science-based medicine and alternative medicine. And I'll make sure I link those videos, that whole series, in the description box of this show. My second guest, Dr. Stephen Barrett, is a retired psychiatrist. He's webmaster of the site QuackWatch, among many others. And he's co-founder of the National Council Against Health Fraud, the NCAHF. He has appeared on Dateline, The Today Show, Good Morning America, National Public Radio, and much more. And he was included in the list of outstanding skeptics of the 20th century by Skeptical Inquirer. Both Dr. Harriet Hall and Stephen Barrett join me here. So great to have you. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do we just want to start by defining alternative medicine? What is alternative medicine? Dr. Hall, I'll let you start.
There is no such thing as alternative medicine. It's a marketing term. Medicine is either tested and proven to work or it isn't. And if it's been tested and proven to work, we just call it medicine. And if anything that's currently being called alternative medicine had been tested and proven to work, we couldn't call it alternative medicine anymore. And alternative medicine is just a marketing term that has allowed some of these ineffective treatments to gain prestige.
Dr. Barrett, do you want to weigh in with anything?
Yeah, there's also a trick involved, and that is that when people talk about it, particularly when promoters talk about it, they don't define it, or they define it to include things that are part of standard medical treatment, like exercise, eating properly. Those are, when you start including things that are part of standard practice, then you can say that some work. And so then that gets distorted to mean crazy things can work.
In my broadcasting days, we had an advertiser who called himself a doctor of naturopathy. This was back in 96, 97. It was on a Christian radio station. And he had a natural health place, and he called himself a doctor of naturopathy. Had live broadcast. We'd come out and do live things, and he had a lab coat, and he had, you know, the little spectacles that I don't think were prescription. And he really did play the part. What is naturopathy?
It's a collection of ideas and methods that have been put together and used by people who claim that they provide treatments that are consistent with nature. And that may involve dietary supplements, a variety of gadgets, and so on. Again, it's a kind of a wastebasket, just like the word alternative medicine. But it's been a little bit trickier because naturopaths have managed to start some schools, get an accrediting agency, and get licensed in something like 17 states.
Licensed by whom?
Licensed by the state in the same way that medical doctors would be, but they would be under a naturopathy board in most of the states.
Well, how do they get licensing unless there is some sort of a demonstrable benefit to what they do? Have there been studies on naturopathy showing effectiveness?
Well, you can't study naturopathy exactly. You can study the various things that they do. And the vast majority of things that they do have been demonstrated not to be useful. But naturopaths themselves have done very little research and actually have contributed nothing to the scientific community's collection of research. How do they get lobbied? If you have a special interest group that works hard and generates communication to legislators and goes through the political process and gives them campaign contributions and does other things, they may get a law passed. There are very few natural enemies to alternative practitioners in the political process.
If you want to know more about naturopathy, I have a new video lecture course on science-based medicine that talks about the difference between science-based medicine and alternative medicine. And there's a whole lecture on naturopathy. And basically, I came to the conclusion that the things that they do that are good are just the same things that any good doctor does. And the things that they do that are special are not good.
I'm following the story, and what prompted this whole discussion, I've mentioned this on previous shows, that this was sort of coming. A gentleman who was given just a horrible cancer diagnosis, and the prescribed treatment was chemo, and they just told him up front, it's going to be rough. You know, it's chemo. This is going to be really, really hard on your already weakened body, but it's really the thing we think you need to do to try to fight this off. And he was just sold the idea that there was a natural course that he could do and that Western, quote unquote, Western medicine was all in the pockets of somebody somewhere and everybody was being taken advantage of. And so he flew himself to Tijuana for something called Gerson therapy. I'm looking at it here. It's organic fruits, vegetables, whole grains eaten, certain substances, supplements to help correct cell metabolism. They talk about detox. They're doing detox foot baths. They're doing coffee enemas. Can somebody explain to me the coffee enema? You have cancer. We're going to put coffee in your anus. I don't understand. And I would like to. Can someone speak to the coffee enema and these types of therapies? What's going on?
I think the theory is that the coffee goes to your liver and does something to remove toxins. It's total pseudoscience. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Are there toxins in the body that we need to detoxify? Can we detox through these kinds of methods? I hear it from people who are working out, losing weight. I need to go through a 3 or 4 day cleanse. I need to detox. Is there merit to that?
No, there isn't. Our liver and our kidneys do a very good job of removing any toxins that need to be removed.
Dr. Barrett?
Because the quacks will say that the liver will store toxins, so they have to give you a flush to get the toxins out of your liver. Actually, the liver does not store toxins. the special word about the Gerson therapy is that it's very rare that anyone gets a really good opportunity to do follow-up studies to see what happens when people go there. I had an interesting experience because I once debated the daughter of Max Gerson, who was the originator of the Gerson diet treatment plan. And she had been going around the country making claims that the treatment would have a 70% cure rate in this cancer and a 90% in the other and so on. So I called up her publicist at the Gerson Institute and I said, how do you follow up your patients? And guess what his answer was? He said, we don't have a follow-up. People occasionally write to us. So here they're publicizing this, and Charlotte herself is going around with very specific numbers. And I call up the guy at the Gerson Institute, and it turns out they don't have any data at all. That's just one thing. And then the second thing happened was three naturopaths who were hoping to find something good persuaded the management at the Gerson Clinic to let them come down there and collect information from patients in the waiting area. They collected the names of 25 people who were there, and then they followed them for 5 years, which no one has ever done before. They contacted them regularly until they either died or they couldn't contact them anymore. And what they found at the end of 5 years is that almost all of them were dead, and not a single one had been helped. A zero help rate. But that doesn't, you know, nothing ever goes away unless the originator dies and there's no one to take his place, or the originator goes to jail and there's no one to take his place. Anything that can be marketed that's quack is likely to have a permanent life unless it has a small marketer base that disappears.
I'm going to camp out here for just a second. I'm fascinated by the Gerson therapy as I'm fascinated by his story. I think he's dropping to the tune of $5,000 a week to stay down there in Tijuana to go through these treatments. And he's always having more weeks added on to his stay, you know.
Yeah.
I was reading an article that was on the National Cancer Institute's website. They had done a Q&A about Gerson therapy. What is the theory behind the claim that the Gerson therapy is useful in treating cancer? And I'll just quote this paragraph quickly. The Gerson therapy, based on the idea that cancer develops when there are changes in cell metabolism because of the buildup of toxic substances in the body. Dr. Gerson said that the disease process makes more toxins and the liver becomes overworked. According to Dr. Gerson, people with cancer also have too much sodium and too little potassium in the cells in their body, which causes tissue damage and weakened organs. The goal of the Gerson therapy is to restore the body to health by repairing the liver and returning the metabolism to its normal state. According to Dr. Gerson, this can be done by removing toxins from the body and building up the immune system with diet and supplements. Is there merit to diet in relation to cancer and or other sickness? It seems intuitive. If we tune our body with healthier foods, we have a healthier body. Yes, no?
Well, no.
I mean, well, thanks. Thanks, Dr. Barrett.
You can have a healthier body, but that has nothing to do with whether or not it will fix a particular disease. You determine whether something will fix a particular disease by testing whether it will. And what is a characteristic of hundreds of promotions of different kinds of methods for cancer that don't work is they make up a theory. You know, pick a few words, sprinkle in terms that sound scientific, and go on your merry way. What happens is that if you have enough people come to you, you're going to wind up with some people who think they've been helped. One of a former AMA expert many years ago said to me, every quack has a following. And the way that works is that coincidence is a factor. Most people who are around for a few years after they've gone through a quack cancer treatment, if you ask them and have the opportunity, you'll find out they had standard treatment first. And they got terribly, terribly sick, and they go down to these Mexican clinics where they're pampered and loved and so on and pumped up with hope. And what happens is the side effects of the chemotherapy wear off, and the promoters tell them, oh, that's your cancer leaving your body. And so they wind up having been substantially helped by standard methods, but convinced that they've been helped by non-standard methods, and some of them go out and become spokespeople or even salesmen for the quack clinic. So that's one of the ways it works.
It's so sad to see those people go down to Mexico for things that can't possibly work. They spend their life savings, they ruin their family, they go through a great deal of suffering. Those treatments are not innocuous. I mean, all those enemas, and they have to prepare fresh juices every hour on the hour and do this and that. It's very onerous. It takes over their whole life when they could be home enjoying their last moments with their family.
It's been an interesting social experiment, too, to watch the comment section below, because I get the vibe that they're only welcoming, affirming comments from the people in the public who are following a very public story. They're like, hey, we're pulling for you. We're praying for you. It's all good. And then if someone sends in perhaps a link to an article debunking much of this, they are chastised often publicly, I think, for seeding negativity into a situation where we need to have positivity. We need to have hopes. Don't rain on our parade. We're all fighting so hard. And so the deck sort of seems stacked against those who might raise a hand with compassion to say, this stuff scientifically makes no sense.
That brings up another thing, that people think that positive thinking has an effect on cancer survival, and it doesn't. You can't think your way out of a deadly disease.
But if I have a better mental attitude, let's say someone prays for me and, you know, I get that euphoric feeling, I have a more positive mindset, does that not affect me physically in some way?
Not measurably. You know, there have been lots of studies done. It makes you feel better subjectively, but it doesn't have any objective effect on the outcome of the disease.
There are some situations where positive attitude may help people comply with an effective treatment, or where
that's true.
A negative attitude might discourage them from following through with the best treatment. But as to the attitude itself, there's no measurable effect on the cancer. Optimism may make you more compliant. It doesn't make you better.
What is homeopathy? I was going to ask you not to delude the answer too much, just as a gag, but it was like, couldn't resist it. Please, somebody define.
I'm glad you asked, because let me give another plug for my lecture course.
Okay, please.
You can put a link in the notes to the podcast, but basically, if you Google my name and YouTube, there is a free 10 lecture series that covers science-based medicine and alternative medicine, and there's a whole lecture on homeopathy. And let me just give you a brief primer on what homeopathy is. If coffee keeps you awake, dilute coffee will put you to sleep. And the more you dilute it, the better it will work. And if you keep diluting it until there isn't a single molecule of coffee left, and then you take that water and drip it onto a sugar pill and allow it to dry, that will be a strong remedy for insomnia.
I have no words. I'm not exactly...
Yeah.
I have no words.
The absurdities involved are huge. And there's another source. Harriet's lecture series is excellent. I've seen most of it. We also have a large collection of information about homeopathy, including history, regulatory documents, all kinds of things, on a website called HomeoWatch. I like to use the word watch, and I run a lot of sites like NatureWatch for naturopathy and QuackWatch for just general misinformation, HomeoWatch, DentalWatch, etc. 25 of them, and each one is indexed with a great deal of information about the subject matter.
I wanted to, on the record, I did contact the National Center for Homeopathy and the American Institute of Homeopathy, asking if either organization had anyone anywhere that might agree to be interviewed for the show, and I didn't hear anything back. It's stunning.
I'm surprised.
It's shocking, really, that no one...
I'm surprised, because they do have spokespeople.
Oh, really? Perhaps the atheist in the title scared them off. I don't know. Or maybe they didn't even receive the request.
A phone call might have been more effective. But,
well, you know, I'm open to having the conversation. Obviously, I would like somebody who speaks the language of science involved in the conversation, but I think...
I've debated... those kinds of debates are not usually very useful, but I've done it. I've debated a few of them. The debate format is really not a very good one because what often happens is that the audience makes their decision based on who sounds nicer.
You can't really talk to those people because we're operating from whole different universes of discourse.
It's really better not to have proponents of quack methods in debate situations. It's better not to give them a forum. They have no trouble reaching their audience. I really don't recommend having them in debates.
You think there's no such thing as bad publicity then for the homeopaths and these organizations?
Not when they're in control of it.
This would not be a friendly forum. It would be a fair forum.
But then what happens? Then what can happen is they play the martyr, pull the martyr card, and arouse sympathy. I've been in a number of debates, and I can say that it's not a great format. I've only agreed to be in them in order to get my voice heard, mostly in the days when it was very difficult to get heard. Now it's easy. You just open up a website and your voice is right there.
Well, obviously, I operate in the arena of where we talk about religion and belief and whatnot, and I've never seen two people on stage or in a debate format ever change each other's minds. But it's more for me about the people watching in the periphery, the people who are sort of watching the arguments presented and secretly, quietly evaluating the arguments to see which one holds water.
With somebody who's extremely skillful and experienced, science canon will prevail much of the time.
Well, and I'm not a skilled debater, for sure. I can tell stories, I can interview, I can flap my gums. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there's a specific skill that many of these people bring to the table to sound scientific and credible and as if they are sort of backed up by the quote-unquote truth, especially against...
I mean, look, if I'm a quack, I come on the program and say, listen, I've got a list of 100 studies that back up what I said. How do you challenge that?
What studies? Who funded the studies? Were they peer-reviewed studies?
Hey, wait a minute. I don't have the list with me. I can tell you there's a list. I'll send it to you after the program is over.
I'm talking here with Dr. Harriet Hall and Dr. Stephen Barrett. Dr. Barrett, you run Quack Watch. Do you ever take heat from anybody who hears the word quack and they come after you? I mean, you've slandered me. You've called me a quack. You've called my line of work quackery. Do you ever get that?
About 4 times a year. The funny thing is that I don't call people. I think I use, if you actually do a search for the word quack on my website, you'll find almost nothing. I use the word quack as an adjective. I don't call people quacks, or I almost never do. And I speak about quackery, which I define as the promotion of methods that are unsubstantiated and lack a plausible, scientifically plausible rationale. So, yes, I have a lot of people pester me every so often, and I've been sued a few times, not usually a difficult situation.
Dr. Hall, science-based medicine is just a business. It's all money. Everybody's keeping people sick so that they can sell them the cure, but they won't sell them the final cure. They're selling them symptom-based cures to keep them on the hook so that big pharma can make a shit ton of money. I mean, what's going on here? It's a big conspiracy.
Alternative medicine doesn't make any money. They don't charge their patients anything, right? And some of these doctors who are concealing the cure for cancer have families and friends, and some of those people get cancer. Or you mean they're throwing their family and friends under the bus just to keep something secret? Come on.
I was in Sedona, Arizona, probably one of the most beautiful places in the United States, but it's also just a hotbed of woo. There's incense and crystals everywhere, all over the place. And I was astounded the more I learned about the procedures that are done with color crystals and vibrations and whatnot. What people are paying per treatment or per hour to have this done by unlicensed, quote-unquote, professionals. They're just forking over the money left and right.
There are a lot of people in this country who have very irrational ideas. And our country is not noted for the promotion of scientific thinking in our schools, and less so in our media. The media are, most of the media are merely packages for advertising, and the purpose of the content is to draw audiences. And unfortunately, a lot of people who are in charge of content think that the way you draw audiences is by offering them magic. For example, Dr. Oz, almost every health-related guest he has is promoting nonsense, And apparently he believes in it, and his producers do. But there have been other talk show hosts that were more rational, but they have a similar mix. Their producers don't seem to believe that presenting anything scientific is going to draw as big an audience. And maybe it will, maybe it won't. I think there are some pretty entertaining...
Just look at our presidential candidates. How many of them are discouraging immunizations and don't believe in evolution?
I did a radio broadcast and a conversation with Rita Swan a few weeks ago. She was a former Christian scientist whose own child died at 16 months, and she's since dedicated her life to sort of being a child advocate and trying to get rid of these religious exemptions. People aren't aware of just the volume of these types of tragedies when young children are placed in harm's way because of the convictions or lack of education of their parents. Either of you want to speak to that or both?
I've written quite a bit about that. I have articles on the Science-Based Medicine web and an article in Christianity is Not Great, an anthology by John Loftus. The harm that religion does to health is really tremendous, and people just don't realize. Rita Swan is one of my heroes, by the way. She's done a tremendous amount of work helping get the laws changed so that parents can be prosecuted if they let their children die without medical care. It's really appalling.
The harm goes beyond the medical harm. Every so often, a legislator who takes an aggressive position to protect public health will be faced with a tremendous negative campaign to try to get him out of office. And once in a while, those campaigns succeed. So that what winds up happening is that some of the true believers in quack things wind up making our government worse. I have to comment on two of the candidates, the Republican candidates. Amazing. Donald Trump, who had this story in one of the debates about how he knows that vaccinations can cause autism because he had somebody talk to him. And he was flat out lying about what he had experienced because he said the same thing. And he got his numbers mixed up and so on. And Ben Carson talked about, oh, I'm in favor of immunization, but you have to spread them out, which is a dumb medical viewpoint. So those two people are absolute public menaces. And not only that, I can't imagine their judgment is any better on anything else. If you can't get it right on something as clear-cut as vaccination is useful, how can you get it right on anything else?
Dr. Hall, you wanted to jump in?
There was one glimmer of hope recently. California recently abolished all non-medical exemptions to vaccinations. I was delighted to see that.
Yeah, there's a vicious campaign underway to try to defeat the doctor. It was a doctor who introduced it, I think.
Yeah.
Introduced the bill. There's a vicious campaign underway to try to get him unelected.
Talk about playing the martyr, right? They're coming after my religious freedoms, my sacred belief. This is part of our identity, and yet they want to strip it away. They're stripping away my rights. This is the argument I hear quite often.
It's a small segment of people I think are being... I'm a retired psychiatrist. I think there's a lot of paranoia in our society. It's many people have it to a greater or lesser degree, and that, it's basically paranoid thinking, the difficulty in trust, and you play the conspiracy card, and that resonates with a lot of people who are paranoid. They don't trust the government. And you can see a lot of evidence about why government might not be trustworthy. But if you're rational, you separate out what's trustworthy and what isn't.
Well, it must be said, too, that medicines, even science-based physicians, the medical establishment, for lack of a better term, is far from incorruptible. Wherever there are human beings, you will see the best and worst. I mean, we have to say that it's a system that largely works, but it's still a flawed system. You'll still find cracks. Can we speak to the imperfections of science-based medicine, or at least the way medicine's constructed today?
I'll be one of the first to admit that medicine as currently practiced today is very flawed. But why would you want to switch that for another system that's far more flawed?
Well, in what way is it flawed? Do you want to flesh that out for me?
You know, there are doctors who don't understand science. There are problems with providing medical care. We don't have universal health care, and people don't have access. And medicine tends to be impersonal and patients get treated like an assembly line, and that's one of the attractions of alternative medicine is that the providers spend a lot of time with them and treat them like individuals.
Yeah, that's what they say, by the way. I don't think there's ever been a study that showed that that's true, and I don't think it's true, but a lot of people think that.
Well, I mean, you drag me into a patient room at a hospital, or you drag me into, you know, a spa with incense and Yanni music, you know, I mean, I'll take the spa, man. I mean, I kind of understand what she's saying.
Yeah, but that's usually expensive, and that is only a tiny percentage of people are exposed to that for economic reasons. But in terms of the average practitioner who practices, quote, alternative or integrative medicine, they don't necessarily spend a lot of time with their patients. There are chiropractors, for example, who spend 2 minutes.
And then they send you off to the roller table and the ultrasound, and you're done, right?
They may, or they may just, you come into a room, you lie down on the table, and they touch your back for a few seconds, and you go home.
A lot of the alternative practitioners ask questions that conventional doctors don't ask, and that impresses patients. There was a chiropractic website where they were trying to talk patients out of taking their children to pediatricians. And they said, you should examine the child's spine and then say, like you found something wrong. And then ask the mother, did Johnny breastfeed more from the left breast or the right breast? And whichever she says, you say, aha, I thought so. Did your pediatrician ever ask you that?
Wow.
That's very interesting. That's a technique. There are a lot of techniques. There are whole textbooks of techniques. I collect them.
I actually had a chiropractor once that I'd known, and I went to the chiropractor. Again, this was years and years ago, and whenever he would do every adjustment, no matter what he did, at the end he'd say, ah, there it is, right? So he would have the table, and he'd crack my back, and he'd go, ah, yeah, there it is, there it is. Now, I didn't
that
really...
was recommended in one of the textbooks I have, by the way.
Really? Really, this is supposed to give me confidence that there's something actually happened. The doctor noticed that the adjustment had taken place. Is that it?
Yes.
Now, another ploy is that instead of saying, is your back pain better, they'll say, what's better today? And if you say, oh, well, I slept better last night, then it's working, even if your pain isn't any better at all.
How can people know the difference between medicine and pseudo-medicine? How can people protect themselves? Those who are interested, obviously those who've already bought 100% in, I don't think they're really listening. Not yet, anyway. But how can people who are interested better protect themselves out there?
It would be a good idea to learn what might be called the sound of the quack, and that is all the different things that should alert you to the fact that the source of information that you're listening to is not reliable. And one of the tricks is learn the signs of unreliability and stay completely away from them. Where do you learn them? Well, my website has about 50, maybe more. I don't know any place else that has a more extensive list than the Quack Watch website, how to spot a quack or ploys that can trick you and how people get misled and so on. And if you don't believe what I say there's no hope for you.
It all really sounds rather sinister. It sounds as if there are people who know full well that this stuff is total crap, and yet it's big business, and they're selling hope to those desperate for hope. It all sounds very sinister in that way.
A lot of those people, by the way, don't know. They're delusional. I don't know that it's easy to tell the difference, but many of the people, probably many of the people that are promoting the far-out ideas actually believe in them, and unshakably so.
But their sincerity doesn't make it any less dangerous.
Makes it more dangerous.
Yeah, I talk about that in lecture one of my lecture series about why people get fooled into thinking something works when it really doesn't. Our minds evolved on the African savanna, and we learn to trust stories from other people, and we learn to jump to conclusions and to recognize patterns. And all of those psychological things can lead us to false conclusions, and science is the only corrective, and science does not come naturally to us.
I remember an old Calgon television commercial from the 70s, and they used to pitch this detergent or water softener or fabric, so I don't know what it was, in a Chinese laundry. And the customer said, you know, how did you get the shirt so white? And there was an Asian actor who was positioned behind the counter, and he said, ancient Chinese secret. And then it was revealed that actually it was Calgon that was responsible. But I'm going to play off that line, right? Ancient and Chinese, words I often hear when it comes to these sort of mystical cures. And it's positioned against, quote unquote, evil Western medicine. As I've titled the show, Evil Western Medicine, we have to talk about this. East versus West, ancient versus modern. What the hell's going on?
Well, there's no such thing as Western medicine. There's one medicine, and it's the same everywhere on the earth. And the fact that the modern scientific method is associated with the Western community is just an accident of history. And when you think about it, it really shouldn't be Eastern versus Western. It should be fact-based medicine versus superstition-based medicine. And that happens everywhere in the world. I mean, in India, a long time ago, they developed an operation for cataracts that worked. That was fact-based medicine. But they also developed Ayurveda, which says that your food should be determined by your dosha, which is total nonsense. And by the same token, in the West, I mean, medicine in the United States and Europe has made great strides because of science, but it was in Germany that homeopathy was developed, which is one of the stupidest alternative medicine things going.
Dr. Baird, anything on this?
The ancient and the foreign are used because it implies that that's why you haven't heard of it, because it was long ago or foreign. And it also, there are often things you can't check. So the reason I think that those things are selected is to try to get around the common sense reaction, which is, if it's really that good, why haven't heard of it? Well, you haven't heard of it because it's ancient, foreign, or the government is suppressing it.
They've been doing it for 1,000 years. I mean, on the surface,
yeah, but
you know.
Do you know what's going on in China today? It's only a very small percentage of the population that uses traditional Chinese medicine. They all want Western science-based medicine, and if they can afford it, they get it. It's mainly the elderly and the poor who are using traditional Chinese medicine.
Largely, the Chinese don't use ancient Chinese medicine. I'm sorry.
No, they don't.
We got to find another name.
The percentage of people in Taiwan who've tried acupuncture is lower than the percentage of people in California who've tried it.
I can give you one insight into why people believe. The National Center for Homeopathy, which promotes homeopathy, has for decades kept score of every press event, newspaper article, TV broadcast, and so on. I don't remember if they have over 1,000 cataloged now. And they rate them as to whether they're pro-homeopathy, neutral, against homeopathy, and so on. And the last time I looked, which was a couple of years ago, 90% of the information coming from entities coming to the public were pro-homeopathy. So what's happened is that the information reaching the public about many of these things is in the wrong direction. And there are commercial reasons for this. There are non-commercial reasons in that. There are a lot of people that stand to gain by promoting these things, and they have almost no natural enemies. I mean, people like Dr. Hall and myself and you know, our network of critics don't earn a living providing the information. We do it as volunteers. It's not always pleasant to do it. We're up against an army of millions of people who stand to gain by promoting the information. And so what's reaching the average person is very unbalanced.
Part of the problem is that journalists don't understand science, and they think they've got to present both sides of an issue when there aren't two sides.
It would be the equivalent of when Richard Dawkins said it would be like an obstetrician having a discussion with someone who supported the stork theory of reproduction.
Yeah.
It just
really?
Yeah.
Got to give them equal time.
Before we put a cap on this, I previously spoke with Dr. Baird, and you'd brought up something about these energy therapies that you felt were a really insidious and you wanted to sort of draw a circle around, and I'm curious about them.
The devices generally consist of a computer with probes coming out attached to it, or probes going into another device attached to a computer. The patient will hold one end of the circuit, and the practitioner will touch it to another, or sometimes both ends are hooked up to the patient. Basically, they claim to make some kind of measurement of skin resistance that supposedly reveals blockages in energy, and then the computer is programmed to make recommendations of products. What's bad about it is that there are probably 10,000 of these things in use in the United States, and people are being told every day that they have certain diseases or certain organs are bad, and they might get scared or they might waste their money and so on. And what makes it so annoying to me is that this is a situation that is so obvious that regulation could clean it up in a matter of months. The FDA has never attempted any kind of organized effort to do anything about it. And so hundreds of thousands of people are getting ripped off every year, and the government is doing almost nothing about it.
It's just like the Scientology e-meter, that kind of thing?
The programming is disease-specific. The e-meter is more interpreted, I think, by an individual.
They're both like lie detectors. With those diagnostic machines, sometimes they will ask the body whether this homeopathic remedy or that homeopathic remedy is better, and they think they're getting an answer from the body.
I see this used by quote-unquote alternative chiropractors as well. Are people in chiropractic who embrace this stuff?
Chiropractors embrace every quackery that comes down the pike.
No, not every chiropractor embraces it.
No,
but many.
I know of at least 20 who don't.
Now, what's that about? I mean, why does this particular brand of medicine embrace quackery more than the other?
Oh, they don't. Naturopaths are worse. In my experience, I've never encountered a rational practicing naturopath. I've encountered at least 20 rational practicing chiropractors.
The thing that gets me is when chiropractors adopt these other things, I mean, some of them use homeopathy and all kinds of ridiculous things, it really amounts to a tacit admission that their chiropractic isn't working very well, so they've got to try something else.
We've spoken before about chiropractic, and you say, and I'll obviously want you to correct what I'm about to say incorrectly, Dr. Hall, but chiropractic has been shown to provide benefit to lower back pain, but no more than, say, other types of medical treatments. Is that accurate?
Not chiropractic. Spinal manipulation therapy, which doesn't belong to chiropractors. Doctors of osteopathy and physical therapists do it, too. And it's only effective for certain types of musculoskeletal low back pain. It hasn't been proven to work for anything else. If a chiropractor tells you that he doesn't believe in the subluxation theory that chiropractic was based on, and that if he offers you short-term spinal manipulation therapy for a musculoskeletal problem, fine. But if a chiropractor tells you he's going to adjust your subluxations, that's not valid at all.
You would place chiropractic under the alternative category, Dr. Hall?
Well, yes.
Well,
therapy is not alternative, but chiropractic.
I think you need to be, you need to be more precise. There's no such thing as chiropractic. Chiropractic is a collection of what 60,000 people say they do. There's spinal manipulation, and there are probably 100 other things, most of which don't work. Spinal manipulation has some limited value, but even there, gentle stretching might be more effective in a lot of cases of people with this pain.
There was one study in the New England Journal of Medicine where they compared chiropractic manipulation to just giving the patients a booklet on back care, and there was no difference in outcomes.
Well, this is counterintuitive for those who've been around chiropractors, right? I mean, a cardiologist is about the hearts, the dermatologist is about the skin, the chiropractor is about the spine. No, that's not accurate?
Orthopedics is about the spine.
Some chiropractors are about the spine. Or I guess it's spine-centered, but whether it's a spine-centered treatment or a spine-centered religion, you have to determine that on a case-by-case basis. There are some chiropractors who think that some mystical force runs through the spine and they can adjust the spine so the mystical force will make you better. Other chiropractors say that, you know, your spinal ligaments or nerves might get irritated, and there are treatments that can calm things down, and these might help you.
Quite often it's claimed that everything in the body is connected, and therefore if you have allergies, a spinal manipulation will fix it. If you have foot pain, a spinal manipulation. If you have trouble concentrating, you know, go to the chiropractor. There are a lot of these types of claims at play.
Well, the originator of chiropractic, D.D. Palmer, believed that 95% of all illness was due to bones malpositioned in the spine. And the other 5% was of illness was due to bones somewhere else outside the spine.
But he wasn't a physician.
No, he was a grocer. And he never tried to test his theories in any way. He lived in a pre-scientific era.
Bones were
actually out of place, and then x-rays came along and disproved that. So they came up with other rationalizations and kept doing the treatments.
Okay, so the cornerstone of chiropractic is a claim made by a non-physician.
Over 100 years ago, he basically said all disease is caused by bones out of place. And when a bone is out of place, it affects the nerves, and the nerves govern everything that happens in the body. And that you can restore the flow of innate, this mystical force, by repositioning the bones. And they'll try to tell you that things like asthma and colic in infants and things in other places of the body depend on the spine. But we know today that not everything is connected to the spine. There's
like
hormones.
The blood cells.
I'm sorry, once again, Dr. Barrett.
The blood cells are not the best example. They're not connected to the spine.
And you can do an organ transplant today, and the new organ in the new body, it doesn't have any connection to the spine at all, and it works just fine.
Very interesting stuff. There's so much to cover. I think the best move is to put the links to QuackWatch and science-based medicine. Certainly your lecture series is intriguing to me, Dr. Hall. I'll, with your permission, put that all in the description box of this podcast.
By the way, for chiropractors, there's an excellent book called Inside Chiropractic by Sam Homola, H-O-M-O-L-A. You can get it for a few bucks on Amazon. It's really terrific.
Inside Chiropractic.
One of the things that's interesting about chiropractic information, guess how many comprehensive articles about chiropractic have appeared in the American media in the last 50 years? I haven't counted recently, but I think it's fewer than 10.
Meaning critical articles, or because I was thinking articles promoting
comprehensive articles that place it in proper perspective. Consumer Reports' last article was 1993.
I'll make a note on the book, and I'll include the link to that book as well in the description box of this broadcast. Dr. Barrett, Dr. Hall, thank you so much for your expertise, for a very entertaining and compelling conversation. We'll do our best to continue to get the word out, okay?
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the broadcast tonight. I will see you next time on the Thinking Atheist Radio Podcast, and have a great week.
Follow the Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on the Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.